Good afternoon, folks. My name's Craig, and this is the Over the Fence show here on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM and Free FM 89.0 if you're listening live on the wireless. Otherwise, you can pick up the show on a podcast, listening back on Raglan Community Radio's flash new website, which is going to get flasher too, by the way, folks, and or on Spotify or some other podcasting device like that. And today, later on, we're going to be talking to local farmer Ross Wallace. He's going to come in the studio around about 1 o'clock. Before that, we're going to have plenty of gardening to-dos. I might try and sneak in some public service announcements if there's time. We'll have a look at the weather, and we'll also go through some headlines, which we'll do straight away after this song called El Scorcho by Weezer. Hope you enjoy this one, and I'll be back after that with the headlines, if we can find the mouse, which is right there. Here we are.
Public enemy, why you wanna go and do me like that? Come down on the street and dance with me.
I'm alive like you, so please, hello, I'm here, I'm waiting. Oh, I think I'd be good for you, and you'd be good. To your room and read your diary, watching grunge leg drop New Jack to a press table, and then my heart stopped listening to Cho Cho San fall in love all over again.
I'm alive like you.
I think we make a good team, and you would keep my fingernails clean. But that's just a stupid dream that I won't realize, 'cause I can't even look in your eyes without shaking, and I ain't faking. I'll bring home the turkey if you bring home the bacon.
Good for me. I'm alive like you.
That's Weezer there with El Scorcho. Now it's time for some primary sector headlines here on the Over the Fence show. I think it's like around about the 92nd episode or something like that, but I think it's actually more because I forgot to record and write down a few things. So Aaron, as the station manager here, has said, for the 100th episode, they're going to have a big party. Is that right, Aaron?
No.
No. Well, you heard it here first, folks. No. There's going to be no 100th party for the Over the Fence show. Anyways, on with the show. A third property has been found to be infected with the cattle disease Mycoplasma bovis. In May, the government stated that there was only one property infected remaining. But a month later, bulk milk testing found a second infected farm in Canterbury. And now a third farm has tested positive for Mycoplasma bovis in mid-Canterbury. So, yeah, it's going to be a long haul, I think, the eradication of that. And representatives from New Zealand's deer industry are travelling to South Korea this month in a bid to boost velvet sales. South Korea consumers take over half of the velvet produced in New Zealand, but exporters have to compete with well-established Russian products. Rhys Griffiths, marketing manager at Deer Industry New Zealand, said older oriental medicine doctors and patients are more attuned to Russian velvet, whereas a survey of younger oriental medicine doctors say New Zealand velvet has a greater presence in the market for them. And three new apricot varieties are set to be picked this summer after almost two decades of research and development. The varieties were developed by Plant and Food Research and the Summer Fruit Industry. And a new company, New Zealand Summer Fresh Limited, are trialling the new varieties in Central Otago and some parts of the North Island. Stephen Darling, the co-chair, said more than 50,000 trees of the new variety were on the ground, spanning some 60 hectares. So could be some new apricots coming on the market pretty soon, folks. And a subscription-based produce company that saves so-called wonky fruit and veg from heading to the landfill says demand has doubled in the past month. Wonky box sells oddly shaped or excess produce sourced from local growers to about 2,000 customers in Wellington and Kapiti Coast. Co-founder Angus Sim said it was perfectly good produce, but that would otherwise go to waste, and as it did not meet market specifications for export standards due to particular shape, size, or slight blemishes on the product. So that's a great bit of innovation there. I did read somewhere that it was up to about 17% or something of the pasteuriser, about 16-17% or something for fruit and veg in New Zealand over the last year. So, good news story. And here we are here with a 7-year, $26 million project which will investigate all aspects of pasture farming was launched at Massey University this week. It will monitor dairy, cattle and sheep pastoral systems to intensively investigate many aspects of these types of farming, including regenerative farming practices. The government has committed $17.6 million over 7 years through the Ministry for Primary Industry Sustainable Food and Fibre Futures Fund. Called Whenua Ho Manu, the program was to be led by Massey University with research partners Ag Research, Lincoln University and Dairy Trust Taranaki. Massey School of Ag and Environment Professor Danny Donohue said this was the most comprehensive study that has been undertaken on pastoral systems, both conventional and those using regenerative farming practices. He adds it will provide a robust evidence base to explore regenerative farming practices alongside conventional pastoral practices in both dairy and sheep systems. A key aim of this program is to investigate potential benefits of diverse pasture for grazing animals, as well as regenerative farming practices, as these have yet to be thoroughly studied, especially in Aotearoa New Zealand context. Yeah, they sure have, all right. And it's quite a long article, but I thought I'd get kind of in-depth in it because it's kind of the buzzword, isn't it, regen ag sort of thing. And adds later on that, here we go, Agriculture Minister Damien O'Connor, who was at the launch of the program, said Whenua Ho Manu would be part of a broader coordinated work the government was backing to provide a robust evidence base to explore regenerative farming practices alongside conventional pastoral practices in both dairy and sheep systems. And he adds, interestingly, in doing so, it will test claims that many of our conventional pastoral practices are already regenerative. And this is kind of the key thing there. The conventional regenerative practices are regenerative or not. And so hopefully, if it doesn't get too politicised, this could be a really interesting study over the next 7 years. So looking forward to seeing what happens with that one and or not. So, yeah, there's your headlines. So I'm going to play now Cactus by the Pixies. This one goes out to Bevan, who requested it last night when I was chatting to him, and I'll come back after that with the weather. With Cactus there. And now it's time for weather. And some weak high pressure is over New Zealand today, bringing some settled weather, but a few weak fronts and troughs are bringing showers or some rain for certain regions like Southland, Otago, and the northeastern North Island. Frosty morning in some areas of the country between 7 and 10 degrees Celsius from Mount Cook to the Mackenzie Country, and highs of 16 in Northland. It's possible that some heavy falls will come in on Friday from the northeast, which may fall from Taranaki to Northland. For the Waikato, there's a mix of sun and cloud. Chance for shower, mainly in the north. Winds are light today from the northwest. Today and tomorrow, the winds are. They're moving east-southeasterly on Friday and Saturday, and north nor-northeasterly on Sunday. Northwesterly Monday, westerly Tuesday, and southwesterly on Wednesday. And it's going to be cloudy again tomorrow with rain developing on Friday and Saturday. And some showers expected from Sunday through next week. So, yeah, sunny and cloudy pretty much after the weekend. Daytime temperatures range from 13 to 17 degrees Celsius. And nighttime temperatures range from 6 to 11 degrees Celsius. Humidity today is between 61 and 77%. Yeah, the nights have been a little chilly the last couple of nights. There's a thermostat on my heater in my house, and yeah, when I turned it on the other night, it was like 7 degrees, 8 degrees, something like that, yeah. Anyways, the sun rose at 6.35 and will set at 6.04, and the length of visible light is 12 hours and 21 minutes, and the actual day length is 11 hours and 29 minutes, and yes, we are certainly heading up quite rapidly, aren't we, to the solstice, where the day and night will be of equal length. And tomorrow will be 2 minutes and 20 seconds longer than today. And the moon is a waxing gibbous. It's about 85% illuminated. It'll rise at 2 p.m. and set at about 4:29 a.m. The full moon coming on Saturday. And in the northern hemisphere, in the United States of America. They call this one the Harvest Full Moon. And rain, yet again, I haven't kind of got myself efficiently organised for the rain, but thank you, Craig. Had 37 mils up to Hoodawai, and just thinking about rain, Ron Rumble, all strength to you out there, my friend, for you and yours. So we're going to come back with some gardening to-dos after this one by Sonic Youth called Teenage Riot, live from 2004.
Thank you.
That was Sonic Youth there with Teenage Riot. Plenty of good feedback noise in the end there, wasn't there? Gardening to-dos here on the Over the Fence show now. And Gardening by the Moon, today through Friday. It's a good time to sow seeds for warmer weather crops like chilies, eggplants and capsicums. Also plant companion flowers to attract beneficial insects like alyssum and forsythia. For Saturday, you can chip potatoes for spring planting. And here is a long list of things you can plant in the Waikato. So grab a pen and a very large bit of paper, and here we go, folks. Alyssum, apples, apricots, asparagus, basil, beans, beetroot, blackberry, blueberries, bok choy, broccoli, cabbage, calendula, capsicums, carrots, cauliflower, celery, chrysanthemums, coriander, cosmos, courgettes, cucumbers. I'll take a breath. Dahlias, daisies, dianthus, eggplants, feijoas, forget-me-nots, fuchsias, gooberias, gladiolus, sympadians, kale, lavender, leeks, lemons, lettuce, lily, limes, mandarins, marigold, mesquite, oranges, and pansy, and viola, parsley, parsnip, peas, pears, petunia, phacelia, poppies, potatoes, pumpkin, squash, radish, raspberries, rhubarb, rocket, rose, silver beet, snapdragon, spinach, spring onion, strawberry, sweet pea, sweet corn, and tomatoes. There we are. It's a long list, and that's all these things you can do in the garden. And our guest is arriving in the studio now. Ross Wallace, I'm going to play right now the song called The Sinking Feeling. We'll come back after that.
My books lay on the table, waiting to unfold. I sit and stare at my reflection while the darkness chills my bones. My head feels like a junk shop in desperate need of repair. The path of least resistance leads to the garbage heap of despair. Yourself. Death is not the answer, for your soul may burn in hell. My memory, my phone deceiver, is turning all my past into pain. While I'm being raped by progress, tomorrow's world is here to stay. Thank you.
That was Vava there with Sinking Feeling. And now we are joined by our guest today, Ross Wallace. Welcome to the studio, Ross.
Yeah, g'day. Okay. Thanks for having me.
Hey, no worries. Yeah. And you're coming here from Okiri today?
Yep. Yeah, just, yep. Yeah. Rocking in off the farm.
Yeah. What's been happening today?
What's been happening today? Well, actually, I dropped my son up at Auckland Airport, so I've been up there today. But yeah, got back and just unloaded a couple of ton of calf milk powder on farm, and yeah, jumped in here.
And where's your boy off to?
He's back to Dunedin, student.
Yes. Okay. So, well, it's exciting for him.
He enjoys it.
And your calf milk, I mean, how many? So I guess. Yeah, well, tell us a little bit about yourself first, and then and about the farm and what have you.
Yeah, righto. Our family's been here for a while. Reverend James Wallace, kind of go back to 1836. So he's a missionary here, first European in the town for about 15 years.
So is Wallace, you know, Scottish or English?
English.
English, all right.
Yeah, English, yeah. But we're English, Scottish, Irish, but the Wallaces,
what most people are.
Wallaces were English, yeah.
Okay,
So he came here 1836, and as a 21-year-old, and his wife was 19, and they started a mission here and had a family. 1851 was when the homestead was built out at Okiti. The original homestead. My brother's now on and farming the land, so, and then they
What timber's that built out of?
That's out of Cody. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the old villas, but it's quite funny because you go back, those old villas were actually, in the day, were kitset houses. They all came in kitset form. Yeah, and up they went. So we grew up there. My dad was born in the house. We all grew up there, as did the previous generations. And yeah.
So what did you say, 18...
So 1851 was when the farmhouse was built.
How many generations is that now?
So I'm sixth, so my kids are seventh. Right. My grandkids, I've got three grandkids, so they're, eighth.
Far out, man. That's a long way back.
Goes back away, but for the real locals, it's not that far back, probably.
Okay. Oh, well, that's cool, man. And so what? When did... was it like the very next generation from like being a missionary to being a farmer, do you know?
Yeah, so it was his son who started farming. So Reverend James, he was here for 30 years as a minister. And then his son was the first to start farming on that property, and that's been handed down the generations. So now my brother farms it. It's all dairy now, so it's a dairy farm. When we were growing up, we were sheep and a bit of dairy. Still remember the old sheep running around the back and getting through holes and fences. Dad pulled, well, he just got, he hated sheep. Kept finding holes and fences and then dairy kind of grew from there. The stories go kind of back to, you know, when they were separating milk themselves and into cream cans, and the way going down to the piggeries. So there were old piggeries that subsequently not there now because they've blown over.
So the cream cans would have come down to the wharf here, and
I'd imagine so. Dad would tell stories of that
on a horse and cart or whatever, I suppose.
They'd have to bring them out to the front gate, so probably a kilometre down the road, and leave them there, and they'd be picked up from there, and off they went. And the old milking by hand in the early days, but I never knew any of that. It was all milking machines, and I hated milking anyway as a kid.
So you brought up in that environment, then I don't know, what did you do? Went to school, I guess, in Tuku?
So yeah, Tuku school, went through there, then we went to school in Auckland, went to Auckland Grammar. My old man went to New Plymouth Boys High School, so I don't know why we didn't go there, but apparently...
Geez, that's a ways away.
Yeah. But so we went up to Auckland, and Like I said, I didn't actually like farming growing up, so I've kind of left it behind and probably followed in James Wallace's footsteps and spent 10 years volunteering in missions and out of Australia and into Southeast Asia. Met my wife, she's Australian, had four kids ended up back here on the farm with Dad, kind of helping out in 2000. And then I fell in love with the business of farming, that farming is more than just having to get up in the morning, milk cows and, you know, be a lackey. So I really enjoyed the business of farming and kind of went from there, went back to school and studied to learn what I needed to know for budgeting and cash flows and all that sort of stuff.
So like a business degree or something like that?
Yeah, I was just through the Ag ITO and getting a diploma in agribusiness management. Which was really good because I didn't do that great at school. Even though I went to Lincoln for a year straight out of school, but didn't last long.
I did exactly the same thing. Yeah, I had a year's work and then went to Lincoln and I lasted about 2 years and I was like, actually, no, I'm going to go and do some work.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's pretty much my story. Yeah. But it's because I didn't learn that way, you know. Being on the farm and learning at the same time was far more practical for me. Mm. And so I kind of lapped it up. Mainly because you had to know. It's like, what do I do here, you know? Yeah. I've got to prepare a budget for the bank. How do I do that, you know? And so they're teaching you. And so away you went. And it all started making sense. That kind of made farming a bit more interesting. But, yeah, it's 22 years ago. And since then we've expanded a little bit and started planting an avocado orchard just to see how things see how that goes. But you got a neighbour doing it, and he said, "Oh, you won't miss a couple of hectares. Just, you know, give it a go." So
why not?
Yeah.
They've been coming along all right.
Yeah, they are actually. Yeah, surprisingly, I know nothing about avocados, so I just did what I was told, and I kind of looked at them, going, "Oh, don't know about these." And the nurserymen were down the other. Couple of weeks ago and said, look, this is the worst they'll probably look because they've been a year on the ground, and he said, no, they're looking real good. So
sweet.
Happy.
And it's important these days, the Don Farm, to try and diversify the income a little, you know.
Well, part of it, I think, for us is I'm a bit getting a bit sick of milking cows, and the shoulders are starting to go a bit, and so just looking to retirement and what we could do further on the track, and also just to, you know, something that's a bit different, kind of piques the interest again. And
For sure.
But we've used quite a bit of technology on the farm now too. We use halter collars for the cows. We've got automatic calf feeders, stuff like that. So I mean, so some of your listeners, the farming listeners, probably think I don't do much these days with all that.
But also might be some people who don't even know what halter collars are. So I guess run through those.
Yeah, so they're basically a collar, and they've developed hugely since we first put them on. That's only a year ago, so it's rapidly, technology is rapidly increasing. But basically, it allows you to geofence your cows, so you can strip your fences out, and these collars go on, basically the cows stay within a grazing area. It's based on some the collars when they're learning, buzzing, and then sounds. So now, as you're moving the cows, they get a sound either left or right, and it directs them through the gate and off to the cow shed or into a new break. But the greatest benefit of it is taking it's something like 3,000 data points a minute off each cow, so it looks at rumination, grazing, health of the cow, heat, so for breeding purposes and stuff. So it'll tell you when a cow's coming on heat, when she's at her ideal mating period, or whether she's just come off heat. Also, like I said, health. So you can look at your app and see, there are a few cows that have got some issues, so I can pull them out. They've got flashing lights, so you can light them up in the morning and pull them out that way. And it just saves you sitting behind cows, moving them behind, on a bike in the morning and at night. And probably last year the real benefit was with grazing crops. So grazing turnips, you could just have a really long face, which I hate doing with a fence. It's kind of like, I can't stuff it, I'll just do that block. Where you could just go 0.12 hectares for the 270 cows or whatever they were, and every day you just they just took that exact amount. That was brilliant.
And how long have you been growing turnips over there?
So yeah, it was a bit of a an on off. I've only had them in probably the last 2 years. We're kind of chicory all the way. So I still do about try to do about 10% of the farm in a pure sward of chicory.
Okay.
Just to get through summer, but the year before,
you mix it in with the ryegrass and the cloves.
I'm starting to do that now with some of the permanent grass mixes that we're putting in, just with you got to meet your obligations around climate change and that kind of thing, and some of those grasses and species are starting to work their way into the thing. But I love chicory, but you got to get in at the right time. So So the season before last, we got in a bit late, had the best strike, but it was just too late. It was November, and we got, you know, one graze out of it. So last year we went, you know, early again, October, got it in, and, you know, it's it does you well.
All right.
But, the turnips were good too. But I find turnips are a little bit hit and miss. You know, the years you want them that don't seem to grow that well, and the years you don't want, you know, you don't need them, they grow really well. But
right.
I think choosing your paddocks is probably key on that one. So we'll see. Yeah. We're going again this year with turnips.
You do like a bit of maize and what have you as well? Or?
No, I used to do maize. I'm not a great maize grower. I didn't get great yield, so it was probably better bang for buck by buying it in.
Okay. And how many cows are you running on the farm?
We're about 270 this year, 270, 275. I've got a few carryovers on there as well. But, yeah, we were running around the 300, but we've kind of dropped it back a bit, and that's on about 108 hectares effective. So it's the stocking rate's not huge. We're once a day all season as well. That helps.
For sure.
But, you know, last year, man, the amount of feed were bringing in just through the drought was just ridiculous. So we're trying to farm to be a bit more self-sufficient, but when you get hit with droughts, what can you do?
Was last year's drought like worse than the previous couple of years' droughts, do you think?
Oh yeah, it felt like it, especially when I was
more of a combination of maybe, you know, low aquifers or whatever, I guess.
Yeah, it was just low. Yeah, definitely. Although in saying that, we probably had our better chicory production year. I think without that, we would have been stuffed. But also having the higher payout, it's kind of like, you're kind of driven to keep going. But regardless, if you've got a drought, you've still got to feed your cows. So you've got to spend money on feed, whether you're milking them or not milking them. So figure, well, we'll do it milking. But it wasn't really until I added up all the feed at the end of the season for our report to Fonterra, that, you know, I actually realised, holy moly, we imported a lot of feed. It was it went from about 400 kilos a cow to a ton last year. So this year I've just gone, nah, we've got to take control of some of those costs this year and really try and manage it. So the stocking rate is probably a little bit lower this year. But one thing with halter does help us with our better grazing, because we've pulled a heap of fences out, so you can allocate the exact area for the cows a lot more accurately. So which is really, really been helpful. So I've, you know, got a spring rotation planner onto the app, and just, you know, I'm just following that.
Man, it's incredible the technology like that, isn't it, these days, man?
You know? Oh yeah. No, and what blows me away is how far it's come just in a year. Like, I was screaming at them about, you know, stuff this time last year, and man, it's just like, if you look back, you just go, man, this is like, the improvements they've made in a short period of time is phenomenal.
And you've been supplying Fonterra ever since they sort of started, or?
Yeah, we have. We don't have too many, haven't had too many options out this way, really. But yeah, we have, and I've...
Was it the New Zealand Dairy Company? Was that operating
yeah,
out
NZ,
here?
Yeah,
back
yeah.
in the days? Yeah.
New Zealand Dairy Company, and so they obviously, all the cooperatives kind of merged together until you had Kiwi and New Zealand Dairy Group, and then they did the final merger to create Fonterra. But I mean, the long and short of it is, I think I'm really a supporter of cooperatives, because at the end of the day, cooperatives are owned by us, and as long as we keep the pressure on the board to make good decisions, which hasn't always happened, but it's in our hands, so we're getting the most value out of it, because we own it. Any company's going to do the same for their shareholders, right? So it's about making money for their shareholders. Well, we're the shareholders, not an outfit in China or anything else, where a lot of the other companies are. So
And it appears to be paying off, pulling out of various countries, and they had interest in Australia and Chile and those kind of things, and they're pulling back from that now, aren't they, as a company?
Yeah, I think the strategy's changed. I mean, I was on the Fonterra Shareholders Council for 8 years, and it was back in Tao Spearing's time and John Wilson. And I think,
How'd you find that experience?
Oh, it was extremely fascinating. It was amazing to see all the intricacies of how the company worked, and seeing the whole chain, from the farm all the way through to the customer. That was phenomenal, and just seeing how they deal with a wall of milk every day. They've got milk coming every day. You've got to do something with it. And that's why cooperatives were formed, because farmers could then just focus on producing the milk. And, basically in a cooperative, we employ other people to do the marketing, distribution, and all that stuff for us. So it was fascinating from that side. The politics of it is interesting to see the politics at work. Understanding the strategy a bit more. Back in, like I mentioned, Tao Spearings, I mean, he got a hard rap when he left,
and he got villainized a bit, didn't he?
He needed to, but at the end of the day, the industry is very different now than it was then. Back then, we're on a growth milk curve. There were people ramping up milk production in New Zealand, the farms converting, and you had all this milk, so you had to do something with it. So I certainly wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think their strategy early on, they had to do something, and so they did expand. But I think where they came apart was with the rules and regulations and everything on the industry, they didn't really see the future and that milk, plateauing early enough, and so that's where it kind of the wheels fell off a bit. I'm really I've been really interested to watch the strategy now, which is about focusing more on New Zealand milk and less about milk pools around the world, and it seems to be paying off at the moment. But at the end of the day, milk prices. We'll see what they can make on the dividend side of it, and the profitability.
Yeah, I think the midpoint a couple of weeks ago was 9:30 something. Is that right?
Yeah, it dropped slightly, I think. So 9:30, but that's record.
It's good lurk.
Those are record payouts the last couple of years. But inflation's bitten hard too on the farm, and often I find myself lulled into a bit of a false sense of security when you get payouts like that. You kind of like, you can be a bit looser with with your money and kind of investment and stuff like that. And you get through it and actually go, we actually need to pull the reins in, keep controlling costs, so that these years we can ride the bad ones, which you always do with farming. That's always swings around about. So
And I guess a lot of other Fonterra suppliers, especially in dairy, man. I mean, the debt level is massive, isn't it?
Oh, we're a bit more aware of that now. Because we've been leasing a block for years since we were on the farm, and just a few years ago we bought the block that we'd been leasing, and I know a little bit about debt now. But no, it's all part and parcel of it, eh?
Yeah, hey man. Yeah, you got to take risks,
Yeah.
And so you're still involved with Fonterra?
Not as a rep. No, I stood down a couple of years ago. It was just during COVID. I think we kind of came to the end of my tenure there. Decided to let someone else have a go.
Yeah.
So I haven't actually been involved much at all. One day you're right in the midst of it, and the next day it's kind of like. Clean cut, but it's been nice actually, just getting back, more time on farm, and
free up a bit of space in your brain for other things.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So your area, it was quite big, wasn't it?
It grew actually while I was in that role. They changed, so I went from 36 wards down to 25.
Right.
So our area ended up being pretty much Raglan to Manukau Heads, and then across.
So that'd be Awhitu, Wogu, Onifero.
Part of Pukekohe, then down.
Mangatawhiri, those ways, or?
Pass.
yeah, I'm just thinking.
We kind of came down. Yeah. We came down State Highway 1 to kind of Huntley and Clare Huntley West. And then it shot out to Gordonton and then to pretty much Hamilton City and cut through the middle of Hamilton. Well, obviously, there's nothing there in terms of farms and down State Highway 23. Out to Raglan, so
And that involved you driving around to go meet up farms all through that area.
We had would attend discussion groups and do surveys and do all sorts of things to try and engage farmers and try and understand what their views were, and it's always the hard thing with representation is trying to get an accurate picture of what people are feeling and thinking. When things are going bad, you usually hear a whole lot. When things are going good, you don't hear so much. But, it's all part and parcel of it. And it's trying to weed out is this just a squeaky wheel? Is it the same person? It's like, is that representative of the whole group? And so that's what you've got to figure out.
How'd you find the level of engagement from farmers?
If you had to
make a rough percentage, say, of all the Fonterra suppliers, how many would actually be engaged with you and talking about stuff?
Like I said, it depended if things were good or things were bad. When it was bad, there was high-level engagement. When things were good, it was probably less of a level. But in saying that, you can't I did a rural leadership program down at Lincoln, Kellogg's Rural Leadership Program. I did a paper on that, on farmers' engagement with the Shareholders Council and with Fonterra. And when I was interviewing farmers, there were some farmers that we would say, oh, you're disengaged, you're not engaged with the co-op. But actually, just because they didn't come to a meeting or they didn't call me, some of those guys were more engaged than anyone because they read everything and that's how they want to spend their time. I don't have time to jump in the car and drive an hour to one of your meetings, but I'm reading everything. So that was really interesting to me. So you've got to be kind of careful as to what you view or how you measure engagement. Yeah. So that I found that really interesting. But as a whole, farmers are a pretty engaged group of people. Like they'll definitely let you know when things aren't going right, and they don't mince their words, which is quite helpful actually.
You know where you're at, right?
And
I suppose, nothing I want to talk about. I mean, there's a lot of anti-farmer sentiment, especially anti-dairy farmer sentiment. I mean, dealt with in any way sort of through Fonterra at all, or like support programs for cockies who might be feeling like everybody hates me, I'm going to eat some worms or whatever,
I think it's Fonterra has been pretty good through FarmSource in actually engaging and offering support to farmers, but step back from that, the biggest issue, and you talk about dirty dairying, that was probably 15 odd years ago, 20 years ago even, things have come a long way, but it's, as farmers, it's not about, what about them and what about, it's really just, well, just get on and do it. And I think Fonterra farmers have actually done well in that space because they've just gone, right, we need to get on and just head down, bum up, which is kind of a farmer's attitude anyway, and get on with the job at hand. And so, they've fenced waterways, they've done plantings, they've done these things, looking at, you know, looking now at stocking rates, looking at, you know, marginal land and whether it's ideal for this or that, and looking at, you know, and things are just constantly changing, and it is tough. You know, you look at what's required and it's like, oh man, it's like far out, you know. It seems to be coming from all angles, and yeah, one of the things I would like to see more of is just rather than having this duplication of information that needs to go, just to have one, you know. I've got a survey sitting on my desk at home that I've been getting for years about, you know, it's a farming census survey, you know, and all that information I've filled out for either Fonterra or for the regional council, for the district council, all these things are, you know, it's like, you know, all these groups need them. Why can't we centralise it? And, you know, so, but anyway.
So much paperwork in farming these days.
I know. It's starting to get a bit, I can see why some of the older guys are kind of like, oh, you know, I've had enough. Leave it to these young fellas to, you know.
It's crazy. I mean, I suppose, it's in every industry, I guess, man. But, but the paperwork is large. And you know, like every other industry as well, like there's always going to be, I don't know, what, your 5-10% of farmers who, you know, maybe aren't doing everything they could or whatever, but like you say, I mean, like, you know, 90-95% of farmers actually are. You know?
Yeah.
And it's not. And what gets me is, like, there's a lot of people think, you know, dirty dairying, this and that, but I mean, most farmers you meet, actually, they care about their land more than anybody else you'd ever meet. You know what I mean? It's not like it's.
Well, it's in our best interest to look after the farm, the land, right? So. The soil, it all starts with the soil. You look after the soil, it's going to grow your grass, it's going to look after your cows, and then your cows are going to look after you. So, or beef or whatever you're grazing. I mean, so at the end of the day, the more we care for it and look after it, the more benefit we're going to get from it. The research and development, that was one of the things, like working with Fonterra and seeing the research and development program down in Palmerston North is just phenomenal, and the research and development that is going into, you know, grasses in New Zealand that will, you know, the new species that are coming through, it's amazing what the future is going to look like in terms of, you know, cows emitting less methane. And for us, you know, if a cow's emitting less methane, it takes a lot of energy to emit methane. So if we, if I can get my cows to emit less methane, that means more milk, which means more productivity to me. So that's how farmers actually look at this. They're not going, oh, I don't care, I just want to emit as much methane as I want. No, we actually want to emit less methane because I know if I do that, I'm going to get more milk in the vat, I'm going to get more money in my back pocket. So that, you know, and that's really, when you care for the land like that, it'll look after you. If you don't, if you're a cowboy out there, you know, farming like a cowboy, you're not going to be, at the end of the day, you're not going to be profitable, because if you don't look after the land, it's not going to look after you.
Exactly, yeah, and a lot of people, you know, and like you say, it's from all directions. It's, you know, from the beehive right through to the media, right through to, you know, various other people, you know, it's all bag the farmers. But interesting on that one, I was just reading the other day that there's a macro algae, which they studied, I think it was either in the States or Britain, where if you add it as, I think it's 5% or something of the cow's diet, it reduces methane emissions by like 90%. So there's always innovations like that coming in, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I know that Fonterra are doing studies on that at the moment.
Yeah. It's really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And you're also, for the first time, you're going to, as we've been sitting here chatting away, have been people drifting into the town hall here at Raglan Community Radio HQ here on Bow Street, and just next door in the supper room there's the community board is having a little meeting at 1:30, which you'll be able to get to.
All right.
After this. And you put your hand up for it.
I did, yeah. Someone talked to me a couple of months ago about it, and I was considering it, and I didn't do anything until the day before, and someone rang up and said, "Oh man, they don't have enough people. Have you thought about it?" And I had, and I thought, "Oh yeah, it's the first time it's been out now that they've extended the boundaries out to Okiti, and I think part of Ohaotira Road." And out Tamata Way and around the mountain. So I thought, hey, it's a good opportunity for someone from the rural area to jump in and have some representation as well. So, put my hand up. But, yeah, there's a there, at the end of the day, there weren't a short number of people there. We've got more, so there's going to be elections. So,
well, that's good.
That's all good. Yeah, democracy working, eh?
Yeah. And like you say, I think it's important. There's some rural voice there. Yeah, it must have been weird for you growing up. I mean, like, you're just there, just slightly out of town and not being able to actually, because it's only, what, this election that you're actually allowed to put your hand up kind of thing if you're outside of the town boundary or whatever it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it's only been since, what, 1851, so we've finally been able to have the family represented. But, I know. It's it is kind of weird because you pay rates and everything, and as a farmer, you kind of go, well, what am I getting from rates? You know, it's like I've got living on a partially unsealed road with heaps of potholes and stuff. But we come into town, and that's where we enjoy our leisure time, and we enjoy your footpaths in town here, and the walks around the beach, and stuff. So yeah, so it's good to be able to get involved and maybe put a little bit of a different perspective. Should I be elected on the community board?
Yeah, man. And you bring that representative experience from Fonterra, and you've been on the board of trustees at the school as well, I hear.
Yeah, so I was a board of trustees at Tiuku School when my kids were there. Going back a while now, but I think that representative role on Fonterra for 8 years has been really helpful in terms of understanding the difference between representation and governance, and also the opportunities that gave me to do Kellogg's Rural Leadership Program at Lincoln University. I've done the governance development program with Massey and Fonterra. I'm on a board of Tier Fund New Zealand and on a board of Flame Cambodia, which is they're both non-profits, international NGOs. And we
I don't think I've heard of either of those, to be honest.
Yeah, well, Tier Fund's a global NGO, and my particularly why I got involved was around the dairy side of it. So we're I've been offering services into Sri Lanka and dairy development there, and they were in a civil war for 30 years, and so really devastated, and milk's a big part of their culture, and so it's we're using dairy to rebuild communities there, just teaching them that, hey, your couple of cows in the backyard, if you just do a few things differently, you can actually turn that into an income for your family. And so we've been able to, or Tier Fund and our partner that works over there, we've been able to lift families that join the program over the poverty line. And there's been about 3,500 farmers so far.
Well, man, that must be incredibly rewarding work.
Yeah, it is. It is. Really is.
Good on you, man. I guess we should wrap it up. I'm going to run out of time. There's Harry's coming in half an hour or so I've got to do the editing and what have you. Send it off to Free FM. Our friends over there.
All good.
Going out through the Waikato. Thanks very much for coming in, Ross.
Yeah, no, thanks.
It's nice to meet you, and I'm sure we'll have you back on at some stage, and good luck with the community board mahi. If you get on.
All good. Thanks, mate. Cheers.
Thanks very much, Ross.
Thanks, everyone.
All right, that's Ross Wallace there, ladies and gentlemen. And yes, interesting chat. And I'm going to play for you now. Speaking of candidate things, this one's appropriate. David Bowie, candidate here. And that's it for the show. I'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening. Ka kite, take it easy. And we'll, back in touch next week. All right, see you, folks. Inside every candidate.
waits a grateful dead. Sell on stage to believe in myself, to believe in myself. Make it a thing to glance at window panes and look pleased with myself, and look pleased with myself. Yeah. And pretend I'm walking home. So bad, I sat in the correction room. Correction room. Took me a bath and a kick in the moon. Kick in the moon. Well, I ain't gonna sock no radar wing, 'cause inside this tin is tin. Would you like a techno plate? 'Cause I'm your candidate. Your candidate. Oh, yeah. It's a matter of life, and the way you walk, you've got a real green queen, you've got a real green queen. It's a matter of tact, and the things you talk that keeps his passport clean, his passport. It's a matter of fact, that a cock ain't a cock on a 12-inch screen, on a 12-inch screen. So I'll pretend I'm. Sake, I'm the candidate, I'm the candidate. Let's pretend.